From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Only yesterday, his supporters vowed he would hang on. But today, Trent Lott stepped down as Senate Majority Leader for the GOP. In the days of Senator Lott's swift fall from grace, a spectrum of reactions has emerged within the Republican Party. Hard right Pat Buchanan called Lott's demise a mob lynching. Mainstreamers worried the uproar was hurting Republican efforts to woo and be seen wooing minority voters and to push a GOP agenda on taxes, abortion, guns, and more. Neocons feared the Lott black eye would cut away the moral underpinnings of their colorblind critique of affirmative action. But now he's gone, not from the Senate, but from his throne there. What is the moral of the Trent Lott story? Where does his stand down leave American politics and race? And what now for the conservative agenda of George Bush and the GOP? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. In this hour, we'll be joined by Charles Krauthammer, conservative columnist with The Washington Post, J.C. Watts, former congressman from Oklahoma, long the lone African-American Republican in Congress, Alan Simpson, Republican senator from Wyoming, and more. Joining me now from Washington is Gail Chadwick, who covers Congress for the Christian Science. Science Monitor. Good evening and welcome, Gail.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks for being with us. Also joining me in the studio tonight is Mickey Edwards, former Republican congressman from Oklahoma and now a lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Great to have you, Mickey Edwards.
Thank you, Tom.
Gail Chadwick, take us through the final steps in this drama. What were the final straws that left Trent Lott out of that majority leader's position?
I think the big one that fell was last week when President Bush strongly condemned Senator Lott's statements. But there was a lot of anxiety as late as Wednesday when you had Colin Powell also come out and Lincoln Chafee, only the second senator to attack Senator Lott, suggest he ought to be leaving. But they needed a candidate. And it wasn't until Bill Frist stepped forward Thursday night that the dominoes fell very, very quickly. And right after Senator Lott's announcement, the press gallery in the Senate was just filled with faxes from Republicans who were also jumping on board. This could be settled as early as Monday on a conference call, and it could very well be unanimous.
That is, for the new leader. But tell us about Trent Lott and his final days, his final hours. Were Trent Lott's people hoping, as recently as yesterday we were still hearing voices, that he could, in fact, through apology, hang on?
Yes, that's what they were saying, and that certainly seemed to be the senator's intent. He really felt that he was not a racist at heart, didn't want to go out for that reason, and was going to fight it. And, you know, I have found very few of his colleagues in the Senate, none, in fact, who will say to your face, this man is a racist. Mm-hmm. However, the remark was just devastating to the party's efforts to position itself as broadening its base and really reaching out to minorities. And I think that's something that the president said directly and in conversations with top people in both the Senate and the House. And I think it was the real push from the White House saying our agenda cannot go through if this view of the party persists that really made this, I wouldn't call it a lynching, I would say a sacrifice was essential.
Mm-hmm. Gail Chadwick, pull the curtain back a little further. The race issue was front and center, and it was large, and it was hot in this whole saga. But you've written that there was around that a kind of very muted civil war going on within Republican ranks. What were the dimensions of that conflict?
Well, there have been conservatives for some time that were very concerned about Lott's leadership. They felt that he had been rolled by President Clinton on a number of issues, from the chemical weapons treaty to the budget issues. But I think a really nice example is what happened immediately after this fall's elections. In Senator Lott's first press conference, when asked what he wanted to do with the lame duck session, he said, well, he didn't really want to rush ahead on Homeland Security. That could come up in January. Mm-hmm. Well, Republicans had just fought, you know, critical elections over the imperativeness of Homeland Security. Senator Lott got a call from the White House the next day, and he immediately backed off and went ahead, and the Senate did pass it. But it's that sense that he's not quite energetic enough, not forceful enough, not effective enough in pursuing conservative goals and objectives. He's really a parochial Mississippi politician and a good insider player, but that the party needed more. They needed someone who could go nose to nose with Tom Daschle, get the agenda through the Senate, and be an articulate spokesman for conservative principles outside the party.
If it's Bill Frist, and if it's Bill Frist as early as Monday, is he that man?
Oh, he's a dream candidate for Republicans. He has he has a sense of an outsider, first of all. There are issues that are going to be pursued by critics, including his ties to the pharmaceutical industry. He wrote a remarkably revealing autobiography before he got into politics that is going to make incredible reading. It includes a fairly chilling section about activities of Harvard as a medical student at Harvard, where he took cats out of animal shelters and used them in medical experiments. Now, he apologizes for it, but it's
well, okay. Inquiring minds.
Yeah, exactly right. He sort of laid out things that are astonishing. But he's, you know, here's a man who's done surgery in Africa to help AIDS patients. He's been at the cutting edge of AIDS issues. He's pushed for health care very early on. He understands it deeply. He has a lot of credibility. He's, you know, resuscitated a colleague on the floor of the House. He's saved a life when a gunman, actually, he saved the life of the gunman. You know, he's someone who has a life outside of politics that commands respect.
And as early as next week, may be the Republican leader in the U.S. Senate. Gail Chedick, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Mickey Edwards, here we are. You've been watching this drama along with the rest of us. It unfolded at first slowly and then with gathering speed and then all kinds of heat, and you tell us how much light. But I guess the question is, do you see the departure of Trent Lott as a step forward for the Republican Party of some kind?
Well, I think it's a mixed story. I think, for one thing, the fact that Bill Frist was so openly supported by the White House is going to raise a lot of questions. Senators, Republican senators, certainly want a leader who is going to represent them, not the executive branch of government. Bill Frist is going to have to, in this job, be able to work out compromises, negotiate with the Democrats to get things passed through the Senate, and that may not always be what the White House wants. So that has an effect. One of the great ironies here is that the first person to try to push Trent Lott overboard was Don Nichols from Oklahoma, who thought
Your
that
home
he
state.
Yes, and Don thought that he would thereby become the next leader, and it not only did not work out for him that way, but Don and some of his friends were pushing from the right because they didn't think Lott was conservative enough, and now they got someone who's not quite as conservative as Lott was. So
unexpected consequences. You never know what they're going to be.
That's right.
Mickey Edwards, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Charles Krauthammer, Pulitzer Prize-winning syndicated columnist with The Washington Post and essayist for Time magazine. Good evening and welcome, Charles Krauthammer.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Charles, you had a terrific column in The Washington Post only today outlining the kind of different factions that emerged around the Trent Lott imbroglio in the Republican Party. Would you be good enough to walk us through those? It was a great dissection.
Well, you had these sort of very old-line conservatives, what we call the paleo-conservatives, sort of pre-Goldwaterites, like Pat Buchanan, who were in favor of Lott. In fact, he said that what happened a lot was the worst lynching he'd seen in Washington, which makes you think, wonder whether this man has ever really thought about what a lynching means. But, I mean, just about all the other conservatives, and that means about 98% of conservatives were very strongly against Lott's continuing, very much angered by what he did. In fact, I think the reason he fell was because there was tremendous reaction among conservatives about this. But there was a split among them. Part of that movement argued on practical and political grounds that he was a liability, that he would make inroads trying to make a Republican majority very difficult, clearly alienating not only African Americans but moderates who define political decency by one's decency on issues of race. Correctly so. And that, I think, was a very strong strain. There were a lot of people who objected, and in the end, I think he fell for many reasons, but that was a very strong one.
Because this mainstream kind of traditional conservative said, we can't reach out and have the kind of diversity
right.
in the Republican Party we need with this stain sitting
right. It was, and, you know, and we heard Mishattuck talking about how people had considered Lott in the past to be ineffective, so this was a good reason to get rid of him now.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was sort of a third string, which I would call neoconservative, but I think there are others who were not neoconservative who believe this, who just felt that on principle, whether or not this was going to hurt Republicans electorally, he had to go because there was a principle at stake here, and that was that conservatives, particularly those of us who've opposed affirmative action, have done it on the principled argument that we are for a colorblind society. We are for the original vision as conceived by Martin Luther King.
And this as opposed to the color-aware society that underlies the theories behind affirmative action.
Right, but we do it because we say that we want to have a society in which everyone is treated according to the content of his character and not the color of his skin, to quote Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because we have argued that, I think rather sincerely and effectively, it is incumbent upon people who've argued that to take a stand when you hear that premise of a colorblind society challenged by that absurd and horrible statement that Lott had made.
And you wrote only this morning, Charles Krauthammer, that even if he should leave the Senate entirely, even if he should endanger the Republican majority in the Senate, from this neoconservative point of view, he had to go.
Well, because I think there's something more important than holding the Senate, important as that is, and that is retaining your soul. And I think that the soul of a party is defined by its fidelity to its principles. Republicans have argued correctly against affirmative action, against race preferences. And I think we want to maintain our stand on that. And to be both credible and consistent, we had to take a stand on the challenge that was embodied in the statement by Senator Lott.
And finally, Charles Krauthammer, what do you see Trent Lott's departure meaning for the future of the GOP, maybe for the strength of each of these three factions you've just described, and more broadly? How does this position the GOP going forward? Is it a big positive?
I'm not sure it's a positive. I think in the end it's going to be a wash. I think in a week we're going to hardly remember this. Well, you know how quickly things move in politics, and by the time the next election arises, it'll be hardly a memory. There's going to be a war intervening. There are huge issues, economic issues and others on the plate. I think this was a tempest. It was an important one. It was not in a teapot, but it was a tempest, and even a tempest passes.
Well, a strong enough tempest to blow one powerful man right out of his seat at the top of the U.S. Senate. Charles Krauthammer, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
It's been great having you. We're with Mickey Edwards here in the studio. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-8255. How do you see the moral of the Trent Lott story? Keith is calling from Long Point, Ontario. Hi, Keith. You're on the air.
Yeah. You know, I think that this is a pretty interesting story, how it's evolving here, that it's kind of actually, to me, going away from the race side and more towards the Republicans trying to make this into, you know, a lynching of Lott to kind of forward the right-wing agenda in our country. I mean, I personally believe that one question that hasn't been asked is, what are the consequences of this, given the fact that these people have been voting for Thurman and Lott all these years? I mean, they were elected when they had a segregationist platform, and they've been elected over and over and over. And, you know, I think the consequences are far more reaching in terms of the kind of underground racism that exists in our country.
But, Keith, Trent Lott is now out of his top slot. Is that not punishment enough?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, we really need to focus on some domestic issues in our country. And I think that right now, as an example, the war, like you just said a few minutes ago, you know, with the war, this is all going to be washed under the carpet here in a couple of days.
Mm. Keith, thanks for your call. Mick Edwards, let me put that to you. Where does this leave the Republican Party and the race issue? Is the Republican Party saying, we're done with all that, we're in a new era now? Is that a fair statement? Does Trent Lott take away a cargo of old, unhappy history?
Tom, I think it's important to remember where Trent Lott came from. Trent Lott did not come out of the Goldwater campaign, and even though Senator Goldwater voted against the Civil Rights Act, it was done primarily, as I think Charles Krauthammer might have said, in resistance to the federal government reaching into the various states. And the Goldwater campaign was really based on limited government. Trent Lott didn't come out of the Goldwater campaign. He was the assistant to William Comer, a Democratic segregationist congressman, and he came out of working in the Democratic Party in the Deep South at that time when it was a segregationist. The Republican Party has not in my view, ever been a racist party. It is a party that supports limited government, which therefore means sometimes, as Krauthammer pointed out, you're on the opposite side of where some of the liberals think you ought to be.
Well, there's a proposition. You can certainly test it. We're talking tonight about the fall of Trent Lott and its meaning for the GOP, for the country. You can join us. Did Trent Lott have to go? And is his departure a victory? For what? For whom? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking tonight about the fall of Trent Lott and its meaning for the GOP, for the country. How does the Trent Lott exit affect your understanding, your view of the Republican Party? Does this leave the GOP, leave America with a cleaner slate on race? And in pushing Lott out, did the U.S. Senate stand up and do the right thing? What do you think? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Mickey Edwards. He was a Republican congressman from Oklahoma, served 16 years in Congress. He's now a lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Mickey Edwards, the race issue is not the only issue here, right, as we heard earlier from Gail Shattuck, though that has been huge, and that is why he's gone. But there were other knives out here. People thought Trent Lott was not strong enough on the Republican agenda. Do you expect that Bill Frist will be stronger, or is it, as you said earlier, ironic, he may be even more of a compromiser? He's a good buddy of George Bush.
Well, I think the problem is I think he'll be a good, strong advocate of the Bush legislative agenda. That may or may not be the same as the Senate Republican legislative agenda. It is the job of the majority leader in the Senate to be the voice of his party, not of the president. So that's something that has yet to be played out. I think one of the things that Bill Frist, however, is going to do is give Republicans a fresh start. Long before Trent Lott said something like what he said about Strom Thurmond, he had the problem of what happened to Jim Jeffords. You know, the feeling among Senate Republicans that he had badly mishandled the
Jeffords Vermont Republican episode. Who went independent, right, came into the Democrats' column, lost the majority for the Republicans.
Right, and Trent, obviously, the job of the majority leader is to try to hold the people in his coalition together, even though they have a variety of different views. There was a sense that Trent just wasn't very good at that.
That he was, good enough at... slapping the flesh at appeasing folks who were upset at the modesty required of the leader to bring in the tentful?
At listening. The job of a leader is to listen. Mm-hmm. And Trent apparently did not do that very well, you know, which is ironic because I was one of his deputy whips when he was the whip in the House. And he was known as a pretty good whip. He was known for a job where you had to listen to people to find out where they were and to try to help bring them on board. But apparently when he got to the Senate, he was not doing that very well. And he was not an articulate spokesman. He wasn't particularly adept at going up against Tom Daschle on TV. I think there were, as was said before, there were a lot of reasons other than the speech. And some people were just saying, here's our opportunity, you know, to get rid of Trent.
We read David Boas at the Cato Institute saying, for all of Trent Lott's conservative rhetoric, we don't see him opposing many government programs. We see him making deals to see that Mississippi is included in those programs. So he couldn't sit comfortably among the true believers, the people with a complete kind of ideological vision, alternate vision of government and how its absence might be an advantage.
Yeah, I think that's right. But it wasn't really the right that got him out. I mean, it was the moderates in the party who succeeded. Now, Don Nichols, who's very conservative, made the original statement. Mm-hmm. But then it was Lincoln Chafee and others who really basically pushed him overboard, I think.
Mick Edwards, stand by. Alan Simpson is joining us from Cody, Wyoming. Alan Simpson served 18 years as Republican senator from Wyoming. Good evening and welcome, Senator Simpson.
How are you, Tom? And Mickey, too, there.
Hi, Al.
Hi, Mick. How are you?
Great.
We're very well. Alan Simpson, give us your perspective from the high Wyoming country out there. What is ultimately, finally, the moral of the end of the Trent Lott story here?
Well, I heard just a brief snatch of what Mick was saying, and it is so true that when you had Lincoln Chafee and Inhofe both supporting going toward a new leadership, that was a very interesting thing when you had that kind of ideological spread. But what the message is, it's a sensitive issue. It's always a sensitive issue. I was involved in immigration reform. Everything I touched in my legislative career was filled with emotion, fear, guilt, or racism. So what's new? It was unfortunate. It was improper. I thought what George Bush said, I would just underline. He said it first, and it was offensive, and now it's done. And it's going to move on to a new face, a new leader who is a splendid, splendid man. Here's a man that just came there in 94, and suddenly he's the majority leader of the U.S. Senate. Mickey and I could tell you that just doesn't happen. And it happened because of consensus. Trent went down, this guy came up like a rocket.
Do you imagine that the conservative Republican agenda will have an easier time pushing through with Bill Frist at the helm of the Senate?
I think any agenda will come through better with Bill Frist as the head of the Senate. It's not always a conservative. I was called a conservative, but I flunked a single test. You see, I was always pro-choice. So when you're given that saliva test of conservatism, you better watch out because that one takes you off the A-list, see? So just move on, and we'll do something that will have to do with, like, kind of running the country. That would be a good thing.
That would be a good thing. But before we move right on, Alan Simpson, what should Americans take away from their understanding of the Republican Party from this story? What did Trent Lott represent in terms of a racial problem? Was he representative of something larger than himself, larger than his Mississippi constituency? Was his everything implied in what he said, or at least read into what he said, indicative of the man? Was that known by Republicans? Was it accepted and embraced until it was too public?
He didn't represent anything but himself, or else he'd still be there. I mean, that answer is self-evident. 50 guys have rounded up to fill his slot.
So. Well, but he's been there for a good long while, and he was hardly an unknown quantity.
Sure, but you know, what he did was on his own. It was as repugnant to Republicans as it was to Democrats. And so he's gone. There's nothing to read into it. We busted our fannies the last election trying to attract the black vote, hoping we'd get 19% or 16%, and we got 9%.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing everything right.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do better. You watch. Next time, I'll put the money up, good old Wyoming, you know, wind-blown dollars, that we'll get more than 9% of the black vote in the next presidential election.
Alan Simpson, on balance then, this whole saga, do you think it comes out helping the Republican Party in that effort to grow the tent?
Well, they did their own laundry. They exercised their own demons. Well, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Well, there it is. Exercise demons out. Down goes Trent Lott. Alan Simpson, thanks so much for coming on with us tonight.
A great pleasure. You bet.
Alan Simpson is former Republican senator from Wyoming. Thanks so much for being with us. We're joined now by J.C. Watts, joining us from Oklahoma, former or outgoing Republican congressman from Oklahoma who decided not to seek re-election this year. He has been the only Republican African-American in Congress. He's author of the new book, What Color is a Conservative? Good evening and welcome, J.C. Watts.
Tom, how in the world are you?
We're very well, and we thank you for joining us. I'm here with Mickey Edwards, who you will know.
Hi, J.C.
Yeah. Hey, Mick, how you doing, buddy?
J.C. Watts, we're asking everybody the same question right off the bat tonight. You look at this from a unique perspective, but what is the moral of the Trent Lott saga that we've just seen come to a dramatic conclusion?
You know, Tom, I think the real injustice in this situation is that you know, the issue of race is a very difficult issue. It's a very tough issue, and America's been grappling with this issue for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on both sides of the fence, you know, conservatives, liberals, Republicans, Democrats, I think they so trivialize the issue that I think what happens is you have good people now on both sides of the aisle, or both sides of the fence, white and black, who really want to have racial healing, but they think, well, if I get involved, I might not say it the right way. My mannerisms might not be right. I'll look like a bigot, or somebody will make me look like a bigot, or someone will make me look like a sellout. So they step back, and good people stand on the sidelines, and they don't get involved.
So is this going to loosen up tongues or tighten up tongues, J.C. Watts?
Well, I think it tightens up tongues, but it tightens up people's actions. And, you know, I think the real challenge, Tom, is where do we go from here? You know, I think action speaks much louder than words. And you know, you look at the left, at how the left and the right both responded to this. The left responded by, you know, going after the senator and attacking him. And, you know, I think they have largely been symbolic in their actions to to really do outreach. But I was just as shocked on the right when many on the right that attacked Senator Lott. Tom, I have led the charge over the last 8 years to outreach. And more specifically, the last 4 years, historical black colleges, anti-poverty legislation, the faith-based initiative, minority health care disparities, black farmers getting discriminated against.
What are you telling us there, JC?
I'm telling you, many of the people on the right that were being critical of Trent Lott, where have they been over the last 8 years? In helping in outreach and helping to grow the party and bring more people into the party. So
you're saying they were in no position to throw stones at Trent Lott. Is that your point?
You bet. I don't think they were. I think Jack Kemp had some credibility on that issue. But many that were being critical, they were saying that Trent Lott's making us look bad. You know, we've done a pretty good job of that ourselves, minus Trent Lott. So all I'm saying, Tom, is action speaks louder than words. And I hope that, our country and our party, I hope we'll learn from this. What happens after the dust settles? Where do we go from there? A lot of this stuff that we've seen over the last 2 weeks, it was all politics and making symbolic statements because you didn't want to get caught in some racist trap.
On the wrong side of the line.
Exactly.
And yet, J.C. Watts, we hear you saying that you've been a bit lonely out there in Republican circles when it comes up to standing up and acting on this front. Mickey Edwards, what do you make of J.C. Watts' kind of survey here? He's saying, hey, some of these conservatives who went after Trent Lott had not a step to stand on here. They had their own problems on this front of outreach on the race front.
Well, you have to make a distinction between whether or not you have people with racial profile problems or whatever, or whether you have people who simply oppose some of the policies that the majority of the members of the Black Caucus support. But I understand what J.C. is saying. Years ago, when I was in Congress, I organized a group of people, Republicans who had done very well in predominantly black constituencies, as I did every time I ran, to try to say, how can we reach out? What happens is it's not racial, it's political. Republicans will look at a community and say, no matter what we do, we don't seem to get more than 5 or 10% of the vote there. Mm. So that's not where we're going to spend our time. That's not where we're going to, walk door to door. It's not where we're going to do, because it's not going to pay off politically. And what you have to do, and I think what JC is good at, is saying, first, you have to go out and reach out. And when you do that, regardless of what results you're getting, eventually it's going to pay off.
JC, how about that? Do you buy that this is not racial, it's political? Do you think that the Republican Party has or has had a special burden on the race front or not?
Well, I think in large part, Tom and Mick, I think what has happened, you've got the Democrat Party that said we're going to get 90%+ of the black vote, so we can take them for granted. We can do symbolic things. We don't have to do anything substantive. They're going to be with us. And I think the Republican Party, in large part, has said, look, they're going to get 90%+ of the black vote. We have to win without them. Let me tell you, outreach is tough. In your church, it's tough. And when I was a youth minister, it was tough doing outreach. It is tough doing outreach in politics. But I can tell you this, if we don't do better as a party in those non-traditional constituencies in the next 9 to 12 years, it's going to be very difficult for Republicans to win national elections. And I don't think we have to vote with the Congressional Black Caucus. What I'm saying, and I think Mickey makes a good point, is Mickey Edwards a racist because he disagrees with J.C. Watts, who happens to be black? No. I mean, there could be legitimate policy differences. I think there are legitimate policy differences with the Congressional Black Caucus. However, historical black colleges, trade with Africa, the faith-based initiative, black farmers being discriminated against, things like that.
You're saying let's see some Republican attention here.
That's my point. Mm-hmm. Those I have used Republican models, Republican principles, going into these communities, assisting and saying, we want to build a relationship. We want to build a trust. And I think, most black people don't think alike. Most black people just vote alike. And why is it that so many people that agree with Mickey Edwards and J.C. Watts, but they don't vote like Mickey Edwards and J.C. Watts? And that's the real challenge, the real question I think the Republicans have to ask themselves in the 21st century. And again, We can't just talk about it and analyze it. I think we have to act on those things.
J.C. Watts, Mick Edwards, stand by. So many people want to join us. I want to invite them in. Tony's on the line. Welcome, Tony. You're on the air.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
How are you doing?
Well, thanks.
Good. Well, listen, I have to agree with the previous caller, and I have to just kind of build on that.
Mm-hmm.
But to expand this whole issue of racism to one of a violation of civil liberties.
All right.
You know, I think we're just seeing that, you know, the Bush administration went all out with the Patriots Act to really infringe on civil liberties, you know, for the sake of just protecting. But in a lot of ways, you know, this could be their opportunity to say, you know what, we're doing this to protect our nation, but we're not going to infringe on civil liberties. We're going to protect civil liberties.
So are you looking at a racial issue or a civil liberties issue? Are they linked, Tony, in your mind?
Well, I see it as a link, and I'll tell you why, because I'm going to go into the next part, is the fact that the Party doesn't have much of an integrity in terms of their being able to have done much in terms of the interest and empowering actually people who have been infringed or actually denied access to, you know, opportunities in this country.
And Tony, we've got it. My time's running down before the break, but I want to thank you for that. J.C. Watts, pick up on that. You hear that abiding skepticism in our caller's voice is saying, I just don't see Republicans standing up, not just on racial terms, but on civil liberties terms that are broader. Do you hear what he's saying? Do you understand why that's coming in?
I hear what he's saying. I disagree with him, and I don't think that skepticism is all bad. I think skepticism many times is very healthy, and I think when you've got Republicans have been saying all along, we've been talking about Big Brother in Washington needing to be Little Brother. I mean, that has been, Republicans have been talking about that long before J.C. Watts became a Republican.
But John Ashcroft does not look like Little Brother lately.
Well, but and I think that's why I say I don't think that skepticism in terms of what the gentleman was saying, I don't think skepticism is always a bad thing. I think we need to say, government, you need to be accountable. But let me tell you something. If you try to relate that to a color thing, you think those 3,000 or so people that were killed on September 11th, you had black people in those buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You had red people in those buildings. You had white, yellow, and brown people in those buildings. I think the president really wants to try to do things to make us safe, but I think we do have to be careful that we don't cross the line in terms of civil liberties, that we don't have these humongous computers over in the Defense Department that's spying on people. I have a concern about putting up cameras around D.C. and all this kind of stuff. I don't think skepticism is unhealthy. I think that's a healthy skepticism that the caller expressed.
And J.C. Watts, just got 30 seconds left, but on the race front, before we let it go, should Republicans have done something about Trent Lott differently before all this blew up? He was not an unknown quantity. Why did it take this for Republicans to act on Trent Lott?
Well, Tom, let me tell you, you do build relationships in this business, and you hate to see anybody have to go through what Trent went through.
It's rough.
I've talked to him several times, and I said, Trent, consider the cost to your family and what they're going to be put through. And he chose today to step down. Tom, that's just the nature of the beast. That is just politics. I don't think some people probably had an agenda behind trying to go after him on the left and the right, but that's the nature of the beast, and sometimes that's the price you have to pay in order to make a contribution to your country.
And some beast it is. J.C. Watts, thank you so much for joining us tonight. J.C. Watts is outgoing Republican congressman from Oklahoma who decided not to seek re-election this year. We wish he had. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about today's fall of Trent Lott and its meaning for the GOP, for the country. Is this proof today that the Republican Party is determined to be a party of racial diversity or not? And what faction of American conservatism does Trent Lott's departure leave on top? What do you think? Are we all done with the race card now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Mickey Edwards, former Republican congressman from Oklahoma, served 16 years in Congress. Mickey Edwards, you just heard J.C. Watts giving his view here, saying, look, this is tough for Trent Lott. It's tough for anybody. Remember where he came from. Separate it from the rest of the Republican Party. But also J.C. Watts saying the Republicans have to stand up and act on the kind of implication of this push out of Trent Lott, that he wants action, not just a symbolic move here.
Well, I think that's right. But I think J.C. would also say that the actions that Republicans take that they believe are beneficial to people in the African-American community mm-hmm. are not necessarily going to be the ones that the Democratic Party or the Congressional Black Caucus are taking mm-hmm. Because Republicans look at issues differently than that. But, you know, the real fallout here is, you know, there have been remnants of perhaps racist, segregationist views in the Deep South. There have been a lot of things said now about the way people in Mississippi are looking at how their state is being perceived. You know, I think there's a real good fallout from what happened, although I hate to see it because I know Trent pretty well, but and you hate to see that happen to anybody. But I think a lot of people in the South are being forced to confront, you know, the way they are seen, and you know, that's not acceptable.
Well,
and
surely,
that the country doesn't accept it.
And you saw how it came roaring back this week when the cover of the Newsweekly's Time
right.
Newsweek, it's all about race and politics, race and
right.
politics, and because it's Trent Lott, it's hung right around the neck of the GOP.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's like saying that when Jesse Jackson makes a comment about Hymetown, that says something about the African American community. I mean, that's just a silly thing. This was not the Republican Party. This was Trent Lott, a Mississippian, you know, who grew up with a Democratic segregationist congressman in Mississippi, and that's where it ought to lie.
I guess Jesse Jackson took a pretty hard knock for his comments too. Speaking of the South and how this is going down there, I want to welcome into our conversation Joseph Crispino. He teaches history at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. He wrote an editorial in last Friday's New York Times about the ways Republicans talk about race, and he joins us tonight where he's home from the holidays in Jackson, Mississippi. Good evening and welcome, Joseph Crispino.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for being with us. You're right there in Jackson, Mississippi. You're our eyes and ears on the ground tonight. What's the buzz? Is there buzz about Trent Lott stepping down as Senate Majority Leader?
Well, certainly there's a buzz. You know, I've only been home for 2 days, home for the holidays, so I don't have my finger on the pulse of what Mississippi is thinking, but I read the news like everybody else. When I first got home, I was surprised by the number of people who really were frustrated with Senator Lott's comments and felt like it did bring up the policies and the politics of the past, and we're not happy with it at all. But Senator Lott certainly remains a very powerful and very popular figure here, and I think he still has many supporters here. So I'd say it's pretty evenly divided as far as I can tell.
You wrote a provocative editorial last week in the Times about race in the Republican Party in which you said, soundbites pitched toward the racist right have been the dirty little secret of the Republican Party for four decades, and you suggest that they got away with it, I guess, partly by obscuring the evidence. What's the evidence? As an historian, what patterns are here? Is there really evidence? We've seen the whole outburst since Trent said this. What is the evidence, Joseph Crispino?
Well, you know, it's telling. He said this in 1980. This is not the first time that Senator Lott
right.
has used this kind of line, and that's, you know, what came out of my research. But out of my research, I think there is a history in which the Republican Party has used these kinds of racial doublespeak in the South for its political gain. Now, with that said, let me say that there are many ways to explain the growth of the Republican Party in the South since 1960, suburbanization, the growth of the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
But race did play a part, particularly in the Deep South, and particularly for those who were building the party at the state level. You know, and some historians in political science today will argue that the most important demographic group to follow in this question of, you know, how do you get to a Republican South were suburban voters in upper South states.
Mm-hmm.
But if the question is the more general one of how did the Republican Party grow in the South, clearly the suburbanization and the development of the Sun Belt South has to be balanced with the history of the Southern strategy and attempts in the 1960s and 1970s, and the famous phrase of the day, to, quote, go hunting where the ducks are. That is, to go after these former Democratic segregationist voters, white voters in the South. I think historians are just now beginning to get their hands around the issue of how to evaluate these two separate historical forces. But the idea that there's some way of explaining the rise of the Republican South devoid of this issue of race is simply not true to the historical record.
Does Trent Lott's stand down then, in your view, Joseph Crispino, give the GOP an opportunity to make a real break with that? Can this all float away on Trent Lott's receding barge?
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to go away. I think that that's what many in the Republican Party would like to happen, is that simply to dismiss Trent Lott as a pariah and to have this issue simply go away. But, you know, Trent Lott is a pariah in the Republican Party today, but, you know, 2 weeks ago he was the leader of the party, and, you know, how did he get to be the leader of the party? I mean, the truth is that I think that, you know, that this is an opportunity, really, for the Republican Party to put this out, put this issue of their own racial history out on the table. And, you know, I think racial healing happens when you put your demons on the table and you deal with them honestly. And I think Republicans today are simply willing to cut Trent Lott loose and put this under the table and move on to the next issue.
And what about the Republican rejoinder here, Joseph Crispino, which we hear again and again saying, look, history is full of problems. We have ours. Democrats have their own that continue to this day, that they take for granted a certain African-American voting base, that they almost actively mistreat that base from a Republican point of view through their own programs, that Republicans saying we are not alone in this three-dimensional chess game of politics and race in America.
Yeah. No, I think it's true, Tom, and Republicans have a good point when they say that Democrats use the issue, too. But it's important to know the history here. In 1964, the Democratic Party makes its stand as the party of civil rights. And in LBJ's famous phrase, he was willing to sign over the South to the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. The Republicans were eager to accept this bargain at the time, and they have gained from it plenty over the past four decades. As time goes on, they want to distance themselves from this past, but it's simply impossible, and I think it's unwise ultimately politically for them to do so, to keep this history of their party unacknowledged and unaccounted for.
You say put it on the table and deal with it. Joseph Crispino, Mickey Edwards, stand by. I want to get some callers in here. Marcia's on the line. Hi, Marcia. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two things. The first thing is I personally felt that this was blown out of proportion, and that in doing, you know, throwing Trent Lott over the side, as you were saying, cutting him loose, as you put it, really meant that what we're going to get from now on are more politicians that are buttoned up. They don't really say what they think. They're afraid to be honest about who they really are and what they represent. I actually think for the country that is a bad thing. I don't think that's a good thing. And Frist really looks like that to me.
You mean a more polished and less open? But do you really want to hear the message Trent Lott was giving, however casually, at Strom Thurmond's birthday party? Is that an appropriate message for the leader of the Senate majority in the United States?
That's the second piece of what I wanted to say, and I think it's important as Americans. We live in a country where people have a difference of ideas, and that's what makes this country great. And what we're trying to do is like force people into groupthink. Now, I personally don't like what he had to say, but the fact that he had to say it doesn't mean that I think he needs to be removed from his position. There are plenty of people in this. If you were going to remove everybody in the Senate that thought what he was willing to say, how many senators would be there?
Well, you raise a tough question, Marcia. Thanks for raising it. Mickey Edwards, how about it? Number one, given what was said, in the context it was said, did Trent Lott have to go? And what about the atmosphere in Washington and American politics today? How close to candor can people be?
Well, I think people can be very candid. I think that Trent Lott had to go because, as we talked about before, there were a lot of different reasons. But one of them, that was just a statement that the people in his party could not abide by. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was something that, you know, we're glad Trent Lott spoke his mind, and we didn't like what he had to say, and he was gone. But I want to say on the previous caller about the Southern strategy and about going where the ducks are.
Joseph Crispino, who's still with us from Jackson, Mississippi.
You know, that's a total misreading of history. First of all, the Democratic Party also goes where the ducks are. You campaign in the area where you think people are most likely to vote for you. Throughout the South, if you remember, I remember the 1964 campaign. I don't know if he does, you know, but the spot that LBJ ran famously about Goldwater, you know, with the atomic explosion, it's because Goldwater, the big issue in that campaign was about defense. It was about social security. It was about regulation.
Meaning in this context?
Well, the Southern strategy meant, you know, to go to an area where there were people who generally favored smaller government, and that doesn't necessarily mean because they're racists. This is conflating a lot of different things. So, I mean, it's not true that the Republican Party was going there because we can send a message and get, you know, people who are racist to vote for us. It's people who agree with us, you know, that government ought to be smaller. And that's such an oversimplification of that issue that I think it's really harmful.
Joseph Crispino, here's the crux of it. Mickey Edwards Edwards says this is an unfair conflation, that that there was an honest message here that was supporting smaller government and I think states' rights, or I heard...
Well, smaller government.
Smaller government, all right,
rights,
all right, right. Mickey's saying. And that to say that this was tantamount to a race card or taking advantage of racial issues is unfair.
Well, with all due respect, I think it's Mr. Edwards who's conflating the issues. I thought I wanted to be very clear in saying that there are two separate historical forces in which you can explain the rise of the Republican South,
mm-hmm.
and that one of them is this, you know, this growth of a suburban middle class South that identifies with issues of fiscal and social conservatism of the Republican Party, like smaller government. But that's also, you cannot deny and you can't simply explain away the fact that race did play a part. And and if you go through and you look at the papers of the Republican Party and the different state party levels, you know, it's clear, you see documents all the time in which they use this phrase, going hunting where the ducks are, and they know exactly what it means.
James Carville uses that phrase. You know, all you know, Democratic politicians use the phrase too. You know, it means to go where the people are who are most likely to vote for you. That's what that phrase refers to.
Where do you see the racial tinge exactly then, Joseph Crispino?
I'm sorry?
Where do you see the racial tinge exactly? Mickey Edwards says this is a universal hunting party here.
Well, the South in the 1960s was a South, mm-hmm. was a society in transition, was a society mm-hmm. in turmoil. And the decision to go hunting where the ducks are, to go after white segregationist voters in the way that they did, was not simply a political decision. I would argue it's a moral decision. And certainly all politicians, that's what they're about, is going where the ducks are or going where the votes are. But, you know, it was a moral decision and a historical decision that was made there. And, you know, as a historian, you simply have to acknowledge it and call it to the attention and let us talk about what were the moral implications of that decision at the time. I'm doing as a historian.
I've got it. I can see you and Mickey Edwards are not going to agree on that point. But a final question, Joseph Crispino. Given the Republican requirement at this point to have a bigger tent in order to achieve the majority they want, given the demographic changes in the U.S., do you see a genuine move away from that history as you see it as being inevitable for this party?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I think this was a remarkable moment for the Republican Party as a whole to have this kind of airing of their past in a kind of public way. I don't know that it's in the nature of political parties to do that, but clearly they're not willing to have that larger conversation at this moment. And they want to move on from this as quickly as possible.
Well, and they will move on without Trent Lott at the helm in the Senate. Joseph Crispino, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Joseph Crispino joined us from Jackson, Mississippi. He teaches history at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Mickey Edwards, so here we are. We've heard a lot of voices tonight. What's your sense of where this whole imbroglio leaves the Republican Party? Look forward.
Well, I think it leaves the Republican Party in the Senate and in Congress generally with a leader who is probably going to be a lot better at bringing people together. Trent was in Congress a long time. He was a good negotiator, but he made a lot of people mad. You know, this speech, as I said, was only the last straw, and it was a very bad last straw, and it's a shame that that's what he's going to be remembered for. But there has been grumbling and unhappiness with his leadership in the Senate for a long time, and probably the thing that did him in most, you know, was Jim Jeffords, and since then people have been saying, you know, this guy is really not handling the job very well.
Just doesn't have the touch. Mickey Edwards, it's a pleasure to have you with
Thanks
us tonight.
Tom.
Thanks so much for joining us. Mickey Edwards was Republican congressman from Oklahoma for 16 years in the U.S. Congress. He's now a lecturer at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by UR.